Welcome to the CBSSports.com basketball podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. I'm joined by senior blogger Matt Moore. Sorry there was no show today, or sorry there was no show yesterday if you were looking for one. I was deathly ill, but I don't feel great today, but I'm good enough. How are you, Matt?
So are you like a game time decision? Are you questionable?
Yeah, I went through the warm ups before the podcast like I usually do. I stretched, I did a little running, and I was good to go. So I decided to give it a go tonight. Well, I don't know if it'll be starters minutes, but I'm at least gonna start the game.
If it was a playoff game, you'd definitely play.
Oh no, I couldn't handle that kind of pressure and an illness. No, I would be in the corner fetal position.
No, who also can't handle that kind of pressure? Is Russell Westbrook, apparently.
Oh, segue. he had a rough one.
He had a rough name. I just wrote this big thing that it's going to come off as excuses for him. And, like, I tried to spend, like, 200 words on the inbounds today writing about, like, no, really, Westbrook sucked last night. Like, he was not good.
Yeah.
His rotations were bad. He was back to forcing the issue. He made bad decisions with the basketball. He shot poorly, which is one of those. I tried to explain, like, look. And I wrote about this last year. I need to track down the post from the Lakers series. And I was basically saying, look, it's a 50-50 chance whether that jumper is falling off the pick and roll, that two-dribble jumper off the pick and roll at the elbow.
Yeah.
If it's not falling, he's miserably cold. If it is, you're screwed.
And what did you feel about, I haven't read your piece yet. What did you feel about the shots he was taking? I actually liked his shot selection. I thought for the most part it was his game when he's going well.
If you come off of the high pick and roll and he's got a really decent percentage, especially from that particular area at that elbow, I think last year was something like 43% to 47%. You know, you come off of that and you're open. Are you really supposed to not shoot that and pass to Kevin Durant, who's being blanketed? Like, are you and then this is always what gets me. Westbrook is the only player on that team who inside of the final 4 minutes, or even not even, not screw that. Consistently throughout the game is always in attack mode.
Yeah.
He is the only guy on the Thunder that is always trying to get to the rim, trying to draw fouls, trying to attack the other team. Like, Durant's really patient, and that's a strength of his. Like, it's wonderful that Kevin Durant is such a patient person that cares about his efficiency. Sometimes you gotta want to kill the other guy.
Yeah, and there are times where Westbrook could balance that out a little better. And I don't think many people would argue with that, but that is just part of his game. You've got the let Westbrook be Westbrook, and you know, you do have Durant to bail him out, and you've got pretty good offensive options for the most part. Yes, James Harden's not there this year, but Westbrook is a very good offensive player, and I find it weird that all of a sudden James Harden was traded, and now it's, oh, let's see how Westbrook and Harden square off against each other in games they're not even playing each other. Like, I don't know why we have to compare them right away. Like, I mean, they're not enemies. It wasn't a choice of Harden over Westbrook. It was essentially Harden over Ibaka or Ibaka over Harden. Like, that was the decision. And not, now all of a sudden Westbrook is being pitted against Harden because he had an awesome first game against the Pistons. And not that the Spurs are a lockdown defense anymore, but they're still a fairly competent defensive team.
Played well last night.
Yeah, and it was like he played poorly. He had a bad game. He had a horrible mistake. I mean, he gambled on the final play defensively, thinking, oh, they're setting up the screen. I bet Parker's going to go this way instead. Nowhere to be found. I mean, I'll give Westbrook this. He had that whole side of the floor locked down. If somehow Danny Green's defender disintegrated and Green was open, Westbrook had him. But he went the wrong way. Tony Parker came around a screen. Ibaka didn't close out hard enough. And Parker just got it over the fingertips of Ibaka and killed him.
Yeah, I mean, Parker ran that Z route, right?
Yeah.
In football, he ran that Z route and cut. And it was amazing. Like, we got a ton of hits last night of a picture I snagged when I was looking at the video because I was going to rip the video and I just happened to freeze it.
It's so good.
And my wife looks up and says, that's where they lost the game, right there. And I was like, what? And I look up, and there's this perfect shot of Westbrook as he's reaching out, and you could just see him go, wait, where's Parker? And then Parker's on the other side, and you just, like, you can, through the image, you can actually feel Tony Parker just, like, being like, oh, thank you, God. Oh, thank you, God. Oh, thank you, God. And Ibaka did a good job trying to close out maybe the only time in the game. But, you know, Parker had a good shot. And part of it, you know, it's really weird to me because I'm like, look, the Thunder were in that game despite everyone playing terribly.
Sure.
You know, Kevin Martin didn't play well. Thabo Sefolosha didn't play well. Eric Maynor, despite hitting the 55 buzzer beater after the third quarter, you know, he really didn't play all that well. He had some mistakes that he made. Like,
was Kevin Martin that bad? I mean, you know, you can't just go off the box score, but 15 points on 10 shots, 5 assists. I mean, the fact that he had 5 assists was pretty impressive to me because he isn't a passer, despite Reggie Miller's comparison of assists to Harden's assists. Like, Martin's not really known as a playmaker.
No, I guess when I watched it, you know, maybe I need to go back and watch his assists more. I felt like he was making a series of. I didn't feel like he was working well in the flow of the offense, and that's the
sure, expected. Yeah, yeah.
He just got there, but
yeah, that's
but
fair.
My favorite moment was actually Martin shoots a three, he misses badly. They get the offensive rebound, they kick it back out to Westbrook, and Martin immediately is like right next to Westbrook and claps his hands at him. Because you can just tell that Martin's like used to it, like, oh, okay, I gotta get the ball back because I'm the offense, and then like
right.
You can see Martin go, oh, wait, I'm the third best offensive player on the floor. I'll go over here now.
Yeah, like, you're not in Sacramento.
He, like, circles back around.
You're not with Ron Artest anymore. This is
yeah,
it's a little bit different situation.
What did you think of Durant on with the play where it was stolen? Because of course Westbrook got nailed because of the pass. For it, which I thought was insane, because this is a problem that Durant's always had. Like, Durant doesn't come to the ball hard, and he doesn't establish position hard. This has always been a thing with him, and it continues to bug me, because what ends up happening is people are like, why do they not get the ball to Durant? I'm like, because if you try and get the ball to Durant, it's going to get stolen.
Yeah, I think that's something where, this is obviously me assuming, but he is so long, and he has great hands, and I just assume that he feels like he's got the pass, you know, and maybe that's why he doesn't come hard to it. Yeah, I just thought it was just a mistake. Like, I mean, I agree with you. Like, he doesn't really fight to get open as much as you'd like him to. But I don't know. It was a good play, you know. It was a mistake by OKC, and the Spurs pounced on it, and it was one of those things.
Well, and part of it though with me is I'm always like. I've said this a million times. I do the same thing with Kobe. Every like high volume shooter in these situations, if you have more than 7 seconds, I want them coming around a curl screen. Like, I want them popping out for a quick catch and shoot at the elbow, because I sure. feel like that's such a high. You know, I feel like if he done that, then you've got separation because Kawhi's probably not going to be able to get the corner without fouling. So that was weird. You and I took grief last night because basically we were talking about how Kawhi hadn't played well. You know, he made some defensive plays because he's always going to do that because he's really talented. And then, you know, De Leon from Project Spurs, who's a friend, but was a jerk last night, was like, oh, yeah, he's played terribly. And I was like, no, he hasn't played well. He had a good play.
Right.
Like, there's a gap there. If you're listening, you need to check out Zach's piece on Tim Duncan, who was absolutely phenomenal last night.
Man, I have been... Like, it's two games, but he has looked incredible. I mean, he's not as quick as he used to be, and he's not as dominant, but he seems to know his limitations perfectly, and that could just be one, him, and two, Popovich telling him what his limitations are. But he seems to, like, all right, I know I need to, once I get the ball, I can't hesitate, I've got to go straight up. Like, that dunk on Ibaka. Caught the ball, doesn't hesitate, just steps through and dunks it. And Ibaka's late on rotation, shocker, and gets posterized. And it's little things like that. He's just become so efficient in the way he moves once he gets the ball, and it's been that way in the first two games. And, you know, against the Hornets, he had like 25 points on, I think, 15 shots or something like that. I mean, something extremely efficient. I think he was 10 of 15. And just abused Robin Lopez and Jason Smith and Anthony Davis. And then last night, didn't shoot that well, 8 of 19. But again, just, you know, he looks like, you know, he just had a proper training offseason that we didn't see because of the lockout last year.
It's, for a guy his size to... have worked at, you know, guys his size, it's natural for them, you know, to get tired because of the wear and tear of the season. It's a hectic travel schedule. as they get older to put on weight. Like that happens with almost everybody. And the fact that he is so slim and has worked so hard, like that takes so much dedication for a guy with his kind of accomplishments to have done everything. Because he's in the twilight. He should be coasting out. And you know, and even then, like he's not talking about how hungry he is for a title or how he has anything to prove. Like he's not given the Kobe treatment of what a fierce competitor. Like, but at the same time, like he's just in killer condition. Like he's just he's done everything possible to say, okay, well, if I'm gonna play, if I'm not gonna retire, I'm going to do this to keep my body in a position to where I can still not only contribute but still be arguably the best player on the team. And that to me is just phenomenal. I don't think you can say enough about Tim Duncan.
And I loved his quote when he was asked if Anthony Davis is the next Tim Duncan, where he says, "Hey, I'm still here. Can I be me for a while?" And you mentioned it the other day, and it's, you know, maybe that's part of the reason he was so good against the Hornets, is its motivation of, "Hey, we're talking about you like you're gone." But he was still really good. Like, he was still one of the best defensive big men in the league last year. He didn't have a great offensive year because I think he had to conserve his energy. And with more rest and more practice time and more training time this year, you know, Pop is so good at managing his minutes that I think we might see a better Tim Duncan all year and into the playoffs. Now, I don't know if that means the Spurs can exceed our expectations, but that's just fun to think about Duncan being there, assuming he's healthy.
I almost find it to where I enjoy Tim Duncan more the older he gets. Like, and this happens with some guys, but like, and it's not just like, oh, look at the old guy out there. Look at how spry he is. Like, it's like genuinely like, God, this guy is really good at basketball.
And that's part, you know, I'm a huge KG guy, and I know a lot of people aren't crazy about his personality, I would say. I think that's a safe assumption. But watching the way he still defends at this age and with all the miles he has, it's just so impressive to me, and it makes me love KG more. And it's something where I really think that we've gotten to a point in training and nutrition and dietary situations where it's like, maybe a guy hits 36 and he doesn't decline. Maybe a guy hits 38. Maybe he has to wait until he's 40, depending on the player and the injury history, to really start to go down, because you can, like with progressive training plans, you can really fine tune your body to keep up. Now, he's not going to dominate, but he can keep up.
Yeah, I mean, you know, KG's said that this is his last contract, and Duncan signed his, and he said that's his last contract. And I think they'll be 39 in KG's 36. Is that right?
Yeah, I think they're both 36.
Yeah. So, you know, they'll both be 39 at the end of those contracts. It wouldn't shock me if they did 2 years and done. It's one of those where there's a gap between, you say, like, wow, you're playing so well, and they don't tend to respond with, yeah, I feel great. They tend to respond with, this is really hard.
Yeah.
like it's almost like it's harder for them, but they put in the work and they know how to do it to where the effects of what they do still show through. Like, it's one thing where it's like, you can feel good and look bad, but they look great and probably feel bad.
Yeah. You know what? I didn't even think about that, but if they retire at the same time, that means we're getting a Tim Duncan speech and a Kevin Garnett Hall of Fame speech on the same night, which will probably be the exact opposites of each other.
Yeah, and I know that the odds are that Duncan's just going to say nice, polite things for 5 minutes and go, but I really hope he opens up and doesn't. I want him to do like an Andy Kaufman-type comedy routine. like I want him to like fully in like mockumentary form like get up there and talk about how many problems he had with Coach Popovich and like the terrible relationship and how he like hated him for every moment of his life. I think that'd be so amazing if he did like a whole character bit.
What if he just went up there like Jeff Ross and just roasted Pop, roasted Parker, roasted David Robinson, just everybody, even down to like Carl Herrera. I like just really go after anybody that's been a Spur. I would love that.
That'd be so great, you know?
And just unleash this, you know, he's had this dry wit thing going for a while, but just unleash this personality that we don't really get to see all that often.
I think Duncan's going to be the funniest, and then KG's going to make everybody cry. Like, you know, KG's going to weep.
Oh.
KG's going to bawl like a baby.
I am going to be sobbing. I am not afraid to admit that. I still tear up when I see that interview with him and John Thompson.
So, moving on from last night, let's the games tonight are fantastic. You've got a home game with the Wolves that you're going to be in attendance at, and Royce has got the Thunder on a back-to-back, so he's going to be out. So I'm the only one catching games tonight. We'll have all the coverage for you at Ion Basketball. But man, Zach, this is a killer lineup of games.
I'm not gonna lie. Like, this is gonna sound stupid because I do get a free, you know, free seat in the media section at Timberwolves home games. I'm a little bummed that I'm not gonna be at home watching four games at once tonight. Like, I'm gonna have to do a lot of catching up when I get home and tomorrow. And like, I'm excited to see the Bobcats. I can't wait to get home and watch the Clippers Lakers game. I mean, there's a lot of good games on.
You know, Knicks Heat's obviously the headliner of the night. And Waits just now has come out just minutes ago and said basically, I don't know why I would have postponed the game, but nobody asked me. who am I to say, actually, I think is his phrase, instead of nobody asked me. You know, going to be a weird atmosphere. It's probably going to be pretty emotional, I think, for New York.
Sure.
That could actually, I think, play an impact on the game because, you know, teams – like, this is a Knicks team without Amare. They're down one of their starters. You know, they've got some injury issues all over. There's a lot of question marks in terms of is this team going to be able to do it. There's a lot of pressure, and they're going up against the Heat. It's the big headliner opponent. And typically, you know, if this were even the Lakers, I would probably feel differently, or the Nets even, or even Boston, I would probably give New York an edge. Miami tends to love these games where there's, like, the emotional component going in.
Yeah.
Like, they get blindsided when teams rally unexpectedly. But when you're supposed to have, like, when there's a hype for the game and it's, like, emotional, that's when the Heat tend to go into, like, Darth Vader destroyer mode.
And I just... You know, these guys are professionals and they can pretty much separate themselves when they need to. But it's just got to be a weird thing for people that live in New York to have to go play basketball for a couple hours, you know. And I, you know, that might not be an easy thing to – you've been immersed in this destruction for the last few days, and that might not be an easy thing to separate yourself from.
Yeah, and, you know, schedules have been disrupted. That's a big thing,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, so. For sure.
I think for both teams, really, like, that's a big thing is, you know, if you talk to any player, like, they are obsessive about their routine because they talk about how it's important for your preparation because any sort of distraction and you feel like things start to get off and then it's like taking one wrong step and then all of a sudden your next two or three steps are kind of off. And so I think that that's going to be that's something to watch tonight. I think it gets interesting. The over-under is 197.5. That's really high for two teams that are really defensive. Knicks are six-point underdogs. You know, I don't like the Knicks' offense against Miami's defense just because...
Yeah, that's...
Running ISO against a team like that is just a nightmare. Because if you don't have rotations that catch them off guard... They're one of the best teams that, you know, they talk about playing on a string so much. I was impressed with it in 2011. I was impressed with it last year. They rotate to guys before you get the ball there. That's one of the things that the Heat are amazing at, is they know where the ball is going before you send it. And there's nothing surprising about the Knicks, like, ball rotations.
And, that you know, we saw it in the playoffs last year. Melo kind of lit up Shane Battier. And then it would get to a point where Spoelstra would just say, all right, LeBron, why don't you go take him? And it was nothing. I mean, just absolutely nothing. Yeah, in that.
It's such a great kind of thing that Spoelstra can do because he can essentially be like, I'm going to wear you out with playing Shane Battier, who you can beat, but it's a pain.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to sick one of the best defenders and athletes in the entire world on you.
It's just unfair.
It is the same thing in Durant, you know, where it was like, and you can tell, like, Durant doesn't like being played by Shane Battier, but he's gotten good enough to beat him. But then it's like, okay, I've dealt with that. Okay, and now LeBron's on me. And then that means LeBron gets to save his energy. That's the biggest thing, is if you let LeBron focus on offense and then save his energy and then use little spurts of his defense, ugh, gets rough.
Yeah, that's going to be fun. I really hope that, you know, I hope they can kind of separate themselves from the tragedy that's happened. And just, not even just for, like, the quality of the game, just for themselves, like, just be able to get lost for a couple hours. You know, that's probably got to be a huge thing for them.
Well, and they practiced yesterday. I think from every indication I've read, they really want to play. Like, they want to start their season. They want to, like, I think, and New Yorkers have actually said a lot of this about this to me on Twitter, which is they're like, we want basketball. Like, we want a distraction.
Oh, sure. Man. Oh, sure. Yeah.
You know, give us something to do because it's, you know, you're looking at and the effects are just everywhere. We'll get to some of the more let's do Bobcats. So Bobcats are +7 tonight at home, a 185.5 line, which I also thought was kind of high.
Here's why I like that taking the over there is I think that the Bobcats are going to just play at an unreal pace this year. And I think the Pacers can take advantage of that.
No one knows what to expect from Dunlap. Like,
he got mad at me in Summer League for questioning like the pressing style, because I asked him about it, and he explained why he wanted to do it, and I said, well, you know, no one's ever really like done this successfully before. What makes you confident that this is the right move? And then he just got bitter at me. He was like, well, you know, like I said, this is just a tool for us to use. And it's like, that's not what you said at all. This is almost the exact opposite of what you said.
You know, and there was a piece yesterday, and we wrote about it. Royce wrote about it on the blog, talking about the – Jordan talked to the Observer, and basically he had to go into – didn't have to. He chose to go into Bobcat's camp and basically say, quit grumbling about the 3 and 4 hour practices they're running.
Yeah.
That, you know, I don't really mind it, because it's one where it's like, look, if you don't have a star player, if nobody has earned the time off, then I don't really mind it. Like, I think that you have to be careful with those kind of things when you have a team that's of guys that are good enough to where you can't piss them off. But it's not like, sure, oh, well, the Bobcats could be really good, but they were ruined by Dunlap. Like, that's not the case. Like, push them. I think the pressing style is going to be interesting. I've argued about this with or I've discussed it with Cardboard Gerald on Twitter. I really want them to run a tiny, tiny, tiny lineup of Ramon Sessions, Kemba Walker, Ben Gordon at the 3, MKG, and Bismack Biyombo. You can sub in Henderson at the 3 if you really want to, but no. I'd much rather have it be 3 guards and all of them shooters, and, well, I guess Sessions isn't really a shooter, but 1 playmaker, 2 shooters, MKG trying to play the 4, and Biyombo just trying to swat shots, and just play 7 seconds or less. We're just going to run and shoot transition 3s, and that's all we're going to do, and constantly full court press. Like, it would be terrible, but it would be terribly entertaining. Because it's like, yeah, you would get killed in terms of the guys with size. They're going to get killed anyway. You think Brendan Haywood's going to stop any sort of, like, good inside player?
Hey,
no. Like,
hey, that guy had a triple-double in college.
That guy has a championship ring, so, you know, good on Brendan Haywood. But that's my thing. I'm like, this is the great thing about the Bobcats. They have nothing to lose. There are no expectations. All they have to do is be 1 game better than the worst percentage mark in NBA history.
Well, I kind of feel like they need to maybe not set the first and second worst records of all time. I would shoot for 12. I would shoot for 12 wins. Like, let's really just get that up there. You know, get past the worst record of all time, a couple of wins, and or the second worst record now of all time, and really get it up there.
But if I were Dunlap, I would just be trying all sorts of crazy stuff. SB Nation had a great article talking about all the crazy things that they could do, like running the flying V and things. and doing surprise full court presses where, like, they all get back on defense and then suddenly spring the trap. I wouldn't go that far, obviously, but I would definitely do some out-of-the-box things. Like, I would do some really weird things because – you know, if you find anything that works, that's good. Like, that's if you find something that works, that's great. Because it's, and I know there's something to be said for, well, they need to be able to have something that's, you know, standard, so that when they get other players, the players that they have that are good can kind of, you know, they have something to build on and they know what actually works. But I don't know that there's a player on this team that fits that description. So
I mean, I what I like about it, I don't like anything about playing Ben Gordon. Period. I would maybe put Reggie Williams or Jeff Taylor in there. But I do like the idea of, look, we were the worst team in basketball last year. Let's shock the culture, figure out who wants to be here, who doesn't, who fits in long term, by having this horribly hectic and chaotic system. And I think it kind of weeds out who should be there and who shouldn't. And that's where you start over from. And you're going to be, like you said, you're going to be bad anyway. You might as well be different and just be wildly entertaining, either in a good or bad way.
Your Wolves tonight are getting they're giving 3 points to the Kings at home. It opened at only 1. It stretched to 3.
I'm terrified because
I'm a little worried for it too.
It's Peck versus Cousins. Someone's gonna die, and it might just be everybody in the arena except Peck and Cousins. Here's something I want to run by you. I think Pekovic is going to be around 20 points per game for the month of November. he's so good at establishing position and getting a shot off inside and getting to the free throw line, and he's a good free throw shooter for, you know, for a center. And I really feel like they're going to run so much through him, and Kirilenko is going to be so good at setting him up. Now, I don't know that this leads to wins, but just for him, like, I could see 20-10 the first month before Love comes back. It's also a contract year.
I've tried really hard to understand your, I'm going to say, unreasonable love for Nikolai Pekovic.
It's fear.
I'll say no, that he won't hit that. And the reason I won't is because the book will get out on these guys starting probably next Friday is when the book will start to get rotated around between the scouts on how to handle him. And so what ends up happening is if he's really dominating that much, which that's, again, kind of weird to say, then they're going to start bringing doubles on him. And I mean, I don't think I really have the confidence in his ball handling abilities to be able to handle a strong, well-executed help defense scheme from him. And he can pass out, and maybe that makes, you know, Roy better. Maybe his assists go up. I got some worries about the Wolves. Kirilenko could be his old self. Not old self. Could be the same player he was in the NBA 2 years ago and really was last year in Russia. Roy...
Well, that's where, I mean, he was a different player 2 years ago than he was in Russia. I mean, he was not good 2 years ago.
Right. He could be the player he was last year and the player he was, I guess, 4 years ago, 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Roy could have a burst of energy from being off so long and then having fresh legs. I like J.J. Barea. I love Jub. You know, I think he can do a decent job. There's a lot of holes where I'm like, although I will say this, Dante Cunningham, I think.
Oh, love me some Dante.
Yeah, the Grizzlies let him go and it just killed me. Like, I'm a big Maurice Spates guy. I've always liked Spates because of his rebounding numbers are through the roof per minute. But I would have much rather have kept Dante Cunningham than Spates. I really miss him and I think he's a phenomenal player.
Hear me out on, now, I already
hear me out on this Wolves team.
I already know what the response is. It's that Will Love was there to provide a scoring threat. Through 23 games in February and March last year, part of that was with Rubio, part of it was not. He averaged close to 17 points per game without a very high usage rate.
That Peck?
Yeah. Now he's going to be the focus of the offense. Like, it might not be pretty. I don't think he's going to, you know, get 58% from the field, but I think he can get like 18, 19, maybe 20 points per game. Just the first month.
Yeah, he had a .878 post-up rate by Synergy. That's 70th percentile. That's very good.
Yeah. Yeah, and I know the spacing issue without Love out there, but now they also have guys that can actually make a jump shot and or dribble a basketball. On the lane?
129 points in the pick and roll on 97 possessions. That's really good.
I mean, that guy, like, you look at his Synergy numbers, moving to the basket, he was filthy. And part of that is Rubio giving him great passes, but Luke Ritenour is a very capable passer. Brandon Roy's a capable passer. Kirilenko is a capable passer, obviously. I mean, I'm saying it's set up to where he can do this. Now, I don't know that it leads to wins. Contract year, best shape of his life, preseason hype. And he's really the option.
Interesting mark here, though. I'll say this. In the post-up, he had a 14% turnover ratio.
Yeah.
That's the only thing that gets my eyebrow a little bit, like...
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He looks better. I mean, he looked better in the preseason. They're all raving about his passing in the system, that he gets it. I am a little skeptical about him handling double teams cleanly.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, hey, if he's good enough to demand a double team, then you've come a long way. Like, here's the thing. I feel like Cousins offensively should just destroy him, even as good as he is, because I always expect these things from Cousins, but I know what's going to happen. Cousins is going to get in foul trouble. That's what's going to happen.
That's what happened when they played last season.
Ooh, actually, you know what? Even better than Cousins, though, you know, and he won't do this, but I would actually.
Chuck Wagon?
Yeah, I would put Chuck Wagon on him. That's exactly what I would do.
That's what I would do.
Like, get somebody just as strong on him and be like, okay, if you want to try and dunk over him, go for it. You know, like, That's probably the angle I would take. This is going to be interesting because if Pekovic becomes a star, then you're going to look like a genius.
I mean, it's, you know, people think it's out of bias or it's out of love. It's out of fear. I'm terrified of him.
I'm just afraid he's going to kill him.
Scary guy. Nice as can be. But I don't want to see that switch flipped at all.
Lakers open -4. They're down. They're now giving. They're actually getting 1.5. They are now underdogs, the Los Angeles Clippers.
Wow.
Because of Steve Nash's injury, I assume.
Wow. I mean, it is and it's a home game for the Lakers. They're the home team. Stars will be out.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like they could drop this one. I feel like the Clippers right now, they're going to have a lull in probably February, March-ish. They're probably going to have that stretch where it's like, uh-oh, the wheels are coming off the Clippers, like happened last year. I said this repeatedly on Twitter the other night. I don't ever want the Grizzlies to play the Clippers again. I hate it. It's just because the Clippers are so good in so many areas, and they're the exact areas that the Grizzlies are bad at. And I'm just like, oh, God.
It's such a fun matchup if you're not a Grizzlies fan. And it's not that they should overwhelm the Grizzlies every time. It's that it's a perfectly matched up pair of teams that leads itself to the Clippers just have enough to where they should win 70% of the time. Like, it's just the way they line up, but they're all going to be great games.
Yeah. And it's you know, Crawford, you and I are both comic, man. That's a huge weapon for them.
Finally worked on his game. I will never get over that. He's 32 years old.
Him and Cap Jack both.
just fascinating.
It's, you know, actually, I may like the Clippers tonight just out of the bench. You know,
yeah.
Even with the injuries, you know, Odom did okay the other night. That's all he's got to do. And you know, with Crawford being able to contribute like he can between him and their other scorers off the bench, you know, that might be pretty good. And then you got, you know, DJ is probably going to be DJ at least physically can hold his own against Dwight. And there's very few guys that can.
Yeah, I'm interested to see just how the Lakers defend. I mean, you know, small sample sizes and all, but the Lakers so far have been like the sixth best offense and the second worst defense, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
And everyone's talking about the offense, and it's like, well, these guys got to defend. And, you know, I do believe at some point it's going to click and Dwight will be healthier and their rotations will be better. Somebody, I cannot remember who it was on Twitter, but someone mentioned that they've never liked Mike Brown's like hedging system on pick and rolls, and then it leaves the big men helping out to really be left on an island against two guys. And, you know, we've seen that the first two games. Now, Dwight's probably good enough to eventually erase that, but he's not there yet. He's still, you know, he's still moving a little slow on offense and not quite jumping as high, it seems. And, you know, until they get that figured out with him, or hell, even Jordan Hill might figure something out in that system, you know, that defense is going to be rough.
Two predictions. One, Pau Gasol will have a better game than Blake Griffin, but there will still be one of those moments that we all remember from last year.
That pissed me off last year because he really destroyed Blake Griffin except for two plays.
God, those plays, man.
Fantastic. I mean, those plays are basketball porn. But
it's an interesting conversation, because, and I think I know what your answer is going to be, but I do believe that there are momentum swinging plays, and while I think the Lakers won that game, I feel like those plays matter, and that's what ends up happening with Powell, and that's why he gets a lot of the blame.
Sure.
Is because he always ends up looking like he ends up looking bad in those kinds of situations.
Good save.
He ends up looking bad in those situations, and. You know, you feel like the momentum shifts, and they won last year, and so it's like the facts don't add up with it, but I think that adds to kind of the feeling about it, but man, you know, that's going to happen. My other prediction is Mamba time. No Nash. Like, no Nash. Ooh. Kobe's already said, I'm not a happy camper.
Ooh.
You know, rivalry game in Staples. You know, the defense has been problematic. They're going to need scoring. He's going to be guarded by Caron Butler, and those kind of guys always get him going.
I can see a 42.34 shot night.
It is Mamba time, baby.
I'm excited. I mean, I know we're not supposed to like that aspect of the game anymore, and it's, you know, about making better decisions, but there are times where I just want the Mamba to be unleashed, and when that team gets frustrated, I'm all for it. And it's not because I want to see the Lakers lose or I want to see, you know, the feces storm that will follow it. It's just fun to watch in the moment.
I'm actually with you as much as I like efficiency, because for me it's like I miss those scoring performances. Yeah. I was noticing this, like, we don't have those really anymore because there is a focus on efficiency, and it's really hard to get, like, you know, you can't, it's almost impossible to get 40 on 20.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're not going to be able to do that. Like,
especially with today's defense.
Yeah, you can't hit 10 field goals and you know, you shoot 50% on 20 shots, and that's, you know, 20 points. And if you get another 10 free throws, that's still 30. Like, so you have to take a huge number. And so, yeah, I'm with you there. I kind of miss it. Maybe we'll get it tonight. I like this one too. Suns are giving 4 at home to the Pistons. I know that the Pistons looked awful, but I don't know how awful they looked. I feel like if it wasn't for Harden, who, like, I think kind of hit them out of nowhere in terms of, like, oh, okay, he's that good.
Yeah.
All right. And they were ahead for a lot of that game before Harden went ballistic.
I was not impressed with the Suns at all. I know they kept it close against the Warriors team.
Yeah, I was not either.
But
Gortat did not look good.
I thought Gortat was fairly weak, even though his numbers were decent. I think he had like 10-10-5 or 10-9-5, something like that. I thought Dragic was pretty bad, especially at the end of the game. The bench was okay. I mean, PJ Tucker was probably their third best player that night. That's a problem.
Yeah.
I didn't even know PJ Tucker was on the team.
Right.
And
I watched him in Texas. I completely forgot.
Pretty big basketball nerd and had no idea he was on the team.
They had one good quarter, essentially, is what happened. They had one good quarter, and then they got really soundly beat.
Yeah, I feel like they came back in like the third quarter. I think it was the third quarter where they kind of made a run and got things at least in line a little bit.
And one more, this is going to be a really fun one. I'm definitely, this is going to be the late game. I'm looking forward to it. It's great to have these late games back. The Warriors open giving 1 to the Grizzlies at home, and they're now getting 1. They're now underdogs to the Grizzlies by 1 point. That's going to be a really good matchup. I feel like
Steph Curry and David Lee were 4 for 30 in the first game.
It was not good.
That's astounding.
I have jinxed the crap. Both guys I've done features on have not had good openers. Iguodala was terrible in the opener.
Do me a favor. Don't ever write about the Timberwolves. I'll pay you money.
Talking to Greg Monroe on Monday. We'll see what happens. So get your money in against the Pistons next week, folks. You know, I like this matchup because you got Conley versus Curry. You've got Tony Allen versus Klay Thompson. Which
I really like that. That should be a lot of fun.
You know, you've got Rudy Gay versus Harrison Barnes. And Gay tends to have really good games against the Warriors, actually. That's one of the teams I noticed that he plays well against. David Lee versus Zach Randolph. Yeah, buddy. And you've got Bogut, who surprisingly started the other night, versus Marc Gasol. This is going to be a fantastic game.
It's kind of weird, like, and I don't mean – people are going to take this the wrong way, but looking at Lee against Zach Randolph, it's kind of like they're looking into a mirror.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Randolph is, you know, obviously a lot better, but it's the same style, and that's going to be fun to watch.
Good scorers, phenomenal rebounders, good touch around the basket, poor defense.
Yep.
It's, you know, and Bogut and Gasol are much the same way.
Oh, like, yeah, sure.
Like, Gasol is rapidly headed towards that time period where he's going to have a down year, and everyone's going to say that he's so underrated, he's overrated. Like, I can actually, like, actively see this happening, despite the fact that I'm the biggest Marc Gasol fan in the world.
Yeah, I mean, I've been banging the drum for him being the second best center in the league. I do believe he's better than Bynum. I know people think that's insane, but
overall, as an overall player,
I mean, you cannot feature Gasol the way you can feature Bynum. Which, you know, is a bit contradictory, I recognize, but I think as an overall player, I would much rather have Marc Gasol as my center than Andrew Bynum.
Well, I think it's because you and I pay attention to things like, and it's not that we're, you know, I think there's arguments to be made for just the ability to score. I think there's an argument to be made there. But
sure.
The counter for us, I think, is, like, for me, it's things like, he's the best pinch post center I know in the league.
Yep.
He's the best passer out of the high post. He is, in my opinion, the best true center, not counting Garnett and Bosch now play, the best true center at hedging on the pick and roll on the perimeter. There is nobody in the league I like better than him.
He's so good. I mean, I guess maybe if you count Vergeau as a center.
Yeah.
You know, he's up there, obviously. He's so good, even if he gets switched out on the perimeter, unless he's guarding Chris Paul, like he can stay with guards, which is weird.
Yeah.
Usually those guys are just, you know, at the mercy of the guy they get switched on, but he's actually harassing them.
Yeah, he is so good. So, yeah, I think this one's going to be really great. Oh, but get this, 191 over-under.
Ooh, the Warriors are kind of a sneaky defensive team last year.
Yeah.
And I could see that being way under.
I took the way under. I think even if they play, you know, even with the Grizzlies playing a pretty hectic pace, their offense gets mired, and the Warriors deliberately want to play slowly. David Lee told me, he's like, this is probably going to be the slowest team I played on, outside of maybe this for his rookie year with Z-Bo and Curry. So I think this is I really think this is going to be a way under. So a great slate of games. This has been another great podcast. I'm glad you're feeling better. I missed you.
I missed us. it was awful yesterday. I didn't feel well. I didn't want to be, you know, sniffling into the microphone every 2.5 seconds. I did it for the listeners. me not talking was my gift to the listeners yesterday. Matt, enjoy the games, and I'll catch up on them as soon as I get home.
Yeah, catch out our stuff from last night. Make sure to read Zach's thing. Make sure to read the inbounds. Follow us on Twitter at IonBasketball. And we'll have stuff for you throughout the weekend and a lot more stuff next week. Baseline Awards comes out Monday, so I get to make award predictions way too early, which I know is going to annoy the hell out of you.
Oh, man. You fell right into my trap on Twitter when I asked you who the Rookie of the Year was. The answer was nobody. That was the answer.
You gave me four players
in order. That was not acceptable.
Yeah, I know.
All right, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
Bye.